We're calling this class Family, the Shadow of Things to Come. And I really think this has been the hardest class I've ever had to study for, to try to have something to say that is true and that I can be genuine in. Family is a big, big topic, and who's qualified to talk about it? I don't know. But I think, really, after thinking about it a lot and studying about it a lot, it really is the family that we have here on earth really is kind of like a shadow of God's family that we're going to experience in heaven. Hebrews talks about the shadow of things to come. You know, these sacrifices and those sort of things were the shadow of things that were to be, but the reality is something different. And you can tell that a shadow is not the same thing as a person. Just walk out in the sun and look down on the ground, and you can see kind of a likeness of who you are, but you can't tell anything about the color of your skin, can't tell anything about your features except in profile. You can't tell anything about how your voice sounds. You can't tell anything about who you love and who you can't stand. You can't tell anything about any of that. All you can see is a little profile of things. Well, think about this a second. You see the color red unless you're colorblind. Let's say you can see the color red. Well, what color is red? Well, we can all kind of agree on what color red is, but we don't really know how each other perceives red because we don't have each other's eyes. I'd like to submit to you that the only way we can see red is because we have these little cones and these little billion, I forget what all they're called, inside our eyeballs that allow us to see red. Well, if we take a look at the human body, what we'll find is certain imperfections in every one of them. And I think we can safely say that nobody has perfect eyes. Well, what if we had perfect eyes? What color would red be then? Ooh, it might be real bright. Well, I think we're going to have some perfect eyes. And so, in that way, what we're experiencing right here is almost like a shadow of things to come because we can only experience it imperfectly because we can only experience what our bodies and minds and brains will allow us to experience. That's an interesting thought. Well, I think the family's that way a little bit. I had a chance to see one that worked out right when I went home this week. I went to Tennessee. I grew up on the Cumberland Plateau there in Tennessee between Knoxville and Nashville. And it's kind of a mountainous area. In the 30s, Franklin Roosevelt, his wife Eleanor, started a program called the Homestead Program. And they invited people to apply for this, and you had to have, I think you had to have certain character traits. I don't know. Anyway, there are good people there who they gave them a certain amount of land, and they gave them a job. It was designed to build jobs. And so, Franklin Roosevelt was a, Democrat, so everybody in that whole community when I was growing up was a Democrat, because they loved him. But anyway, they got a section of land. It wasn't a whole section; it was a piece of land, sometimes 40 acres. And then the whole community would work on everybody's house, and they built it out of native material. There's a lot of fieldstone and lumber there, and so they built their houses out of fieldstone and timber. Had fireplaces, really kind of what you might call a quaint looking cottage now, but really sturdy built, but they'd build the barn first and live in it, and then when the barn was done, they'd move into their house, then go work on another man's house. Anyway, they built a really close-knit community there. It's almost like a pioneering community because it was real rural in those days in that county. Anyway, I spoke at the funeral last month of one of those original guys. His name was Haney Breeding, and he grew up and married a lady named Lilloween. Aren't those some fine names? Haney and Lilloween. Anyway, they were at church every time the door was open in my young life, and I was little, and he was my hero because he loved to coon hunt. And he also loved to trade horses and knives and guns and whatever else there was to trade. He was a trader. But every time he was talking about his wife as I was growing up, he was bragging on her. Really talking good about his wife when I heard him talk about his wife. And he treated me really well. I think little people really need some adult grown folks to teach them how adult grown folks ought to treat little people who are outside their family. And he did. He taught me how to do that. He spent a lot of time with me when it was not worth his time to spend time with me. But it was fun. And he let me have the occasional dog and things like that. So that was fun. But he died at 90 years old last month. And I spoke at his funeral. His family honored me a lot by asking me to speak. Well, I went back home this last week to see my daddy. And I went by to see his wife, Lil Wayne. And she was real happy to see me. She's 86. But she said, "You know, Nathan, Haney in his later years told me things about his earlier years that I never had heard." He was a World War II veteran. And when he came back from the war, he married Lil Wayne. But he said, we were sitting around not long ago on the couch, and he said, "Mama, you know, if it hadn't been for you, I'd probably be in the penitentiary." And I thought, boy, what are you talking about? I've never seen Haney do a bad thing that put him in the penitentiary. But she said, he said, "You know, I had it in my mind that when I got back from the war, I was going to buy that pool hall down there on Bird's Creek. And I was going to run a pool hall. And then I met you." And he said, "Mama, you made a Christian out of me." Now, how good is that? That's one that turned out right, isn't it? That's so neat. That's so inspiring, because it's not just the people you know who you affect. It's the second generationers. Isn't it not? No, it's not just that. It's my children. If Haney had not been who he was to me, I wouldn't be who I am to me, or to Lindy, or to my kids. And my kids wouldn't be to their kids. See how that works? Influence is an amazing, amazing deal. It's multi-generational. But if it hadn't been for Lil Wayne, he'd have been in the penitentiary. What an interesting thought that was. But family's a shadow of things to come. I think they're not as good here on earth as they're going to be. But the Bible, start to finish, guys, is about reconciliation and redemption. Start to finish. It's about unity. And it's about bringing together the family of God. That's the story of Jesus, and that's the story of Bible Genesis all the way through to Revelation, is reconciliation and redemption to God. So marriage, what I want to talk about today is marriage. What a strange subject marriage is. And it's scary to talk about it too. But marriage, I think, is kind of the ultimate blending of the spiritual and the physical here on this earth. I think it's designed to be as close of a bond as there is on this earth. Somebody tell me what marriage is. Isn't this a thought? I performed my son Logan's marriage ceremony about 3 years ago, and he and Cindy stood up there, and I had memorized some things to say, and I said, "Now, Logan, do you promise that you're going to take care of this girl and you're going to love her until you die?" He said, "Yes." And I said, "Cindy," those aren't the exact words, it's kind of a paraphrase. But I said, "Cindy, do you promise you're going to love Logan and have him to hold until death do you part?" She said, "Yeah." And then they were married. That's a mysterious kind of a union, is it not? Tell me what marriage is. What is that? What's so significant about two people getting together and promising certain things to each other? And then legally and spiritually, this bonding happens. What is marriage? Life commitment to one person. Is that you, Sam? All right. All right. Thank you. Never stop loving. Thank you. Pardon me? Example of Christ. Christ's love for us and how we ought to treat each other. Some of y'all got a lot of experience in this area. So, what is marriage? Pardon me? Loving in spite of. You be quiet back there, Lindy Lou. I expected a statement of some kind coming from the right back quadrant. Give and take. All right. Commitment for life. Two souls come together. Yeah, okay. Melding of a lot of things. Yeah, like your entire life. Yeah. Sometimes it seems more than that, doesn't it? To see to every now and then. Does it involve a promise? Does marriage involve a promise? Yeah. Three-way covenant. Talk to me about that. Whoa. Thank you. Is it designed to promote a sense of security among the parties? I think so. Because you're given a promise. Like, I'll take care of you. I promise. Until I die. Yes, sir. He certainly did. And there's also such a thing as the bride of Christ, is there not? Which is the church. I think when we look at a physical marriage, we're talking about more than a contract. It actually is a representation of a much, much bigger dynamic that's going on here. And it's designed to teach us certain things, I believe. But a guy named Ray Vanderland taught me a whole lot, and I wanted to, what I have to say here in the next few minutes, I owe a lot to his perspective on this. He spent 20 years in the Jewish culture trying to think like an Eastern Jew, trying to think like a rabbi thinks. And he stated that he became converted to Jesus Christ in a rabbi school. But he spent a lot of time over in that area training up under rabbis and also getting inculcated into the, enmeshed into this culture of that area and trying to learn how to think like a Jew thinks. And one of the statements he made was that the Jewish people, Eastern thought, tends to think more in pictures than it does in rational thought. Like he said, okay, when you think of God, what do you think? When you think of God, what do you think? Somebody. Pardon me? Love. Mercy. Protection. Forgiveness. Yeah. What about King? Father. Yeah. He was saying that the Western thought tends to think of God in kind of academic terms, like, and then the Eastern thought tends to think about him in terms of a picture or a relationship, like Father, or like Shepherd, or the bread of life, those type of things, things you can look at and say, oh, that's God right there. But be that as it may, he taught me a lot about how the Jewish people look at certain things within their society, and one of them was marriage. There was he witnessed a Bedouin, an Arabic couple, exchanging their engagement vows, not wedding vows, but engagement vows. And they, of course, a guy was getting married to a girl, and it was called a covenant. Now, a covenant is an interesting deal. Now, I might only have this board up here as a security blanket because I don't know if you can even see that back there. Can y'all see it in the back? I know it's not very big, but a covenant, it's not a contract. There's a difference between a covenant and a contract. A covenant is actually establishing a relationship of some kind. It establishes a relationship. And it's between two or more people or beings or whatever. Usually two, I believe. But there's always a greater and a lesser in a covenant. It's not between equals. A covenant has a greater and a lesser party. And this covenant is in establishing a relationship between a greater and a lesser party in which the greater sets the terms for both of them. So, a covenant is saying, all right, I am going to do this with you, and if I don't do it, then you can do this to me. And you, on your side, I'm going to do this with for me, and if you don't do it, then I can do that for you. So, this Ray Vanderland watched this happen in this engagement ceremony. And what they had was a girl here and a guy here. And in between them was a little rock thing with a depression in it. And somebody came up and killed an animal and let the blood flow down in there. The boy was there with his father. And the girl was there with either her father or grandfather or something. And so there were other people there. Now, in this covenant, they're standing across from the blood from each other, and so the boy's father went first because he was deemed as the greater in this case, and he made a promise. And I don't know what promises he made exactly, but basically he was saying, all right, my son is fixing to marry your daughter, and if my son, I promise that he'll be faithful and a good provider and he'll love her, whatever it was he said. And if he doesn't do that, then he stepped into this blood and stomped around in it and got it up on his legs and his robe. He said, you can do this to me. And then he stepped out. And then the girl's grandfather stepped in and said, now I promise that this girl will be a good wife, or whatever it was he said, and if she isn't, you can do this to me. Well, Vanderland says that more than one father has been found dead in a wadi somewhere with his throat cut and footprints in his blood because of that kind of thing right there. All right, there's the power of a covenant. Now, Genesis 15, I think it is marriage a covenant? Now this to me is an obscure scripture in Genesis 15. And so I'm going to present it to you basically the way Vanderland presented it and for you to contemplate on and see if it makes sense to you. Abraham was a righteous man. He believed God and it was counted to him as righteousness. God promised Abraham, he said, I'm going to give you three things. What were they? Pardon me? Name? Did you say name? A name? Maybe four things then. Well, he named him Abraham. Is that what you mean, Tyrone? Yeah, well, he promised him four things. What are the other three, Tyrone? Okay, through his seed all nations will be blessed. And what can we infer from that statement? Pardon me? He'll have a child, and then, Christ, I think. He's promising him a Messiah through his progeny. So let me just say Messiah. Is that how you pronounce, is that how you spell Messiah? Something like that? Okay. Okay. So through his name, through his seed, all nations on earth will be blessed, and that ended up being the Messiah, Jesus. Okay. What else did he promise him? Land. Where'd he say his land would be? All over that country out there. I don't remember all the names of it. But he promised him a nation. He promised a land. What else did he promise him? A great nation. Yeah, he said, go out and look at the stars. And if you can count those, then you can count your ancestors here, your descendants. Yeah. Okay, a great nation. Now this is scattered out right around in there in Genesis 14, 15, 16, 17, right in there. But those are the three things he promised him. Now, Abraham questioned some of this. And one of the things he questioned was, what do you mean you're going to give me this? I don't even have any kids. And I'm old. So at that point, God offered to make a covenant with Abraham to assure that these promises would come true. Now, but both parties have to agree to do something, right? So God is agreeing to do this for Abraham. What does Abraham have to do? Pardon me? Believe? Go to a land I'll show you? Circumcision was one of them. Believe? Genesis 17 says, you got to walk before me and be blameless. So all Abraham's got to do is be perfect. Read up on this, because I'm certainly not the last word on it, but it's intriguing to my mind. If that's really true, God's saying, all right, I'm going to give you this. That's my part of the bargain. Abraham, you got to do this. Walk before me and be perfect. Be blameless. Well, that is a kind of a lopsided proposition. But God said, I'm going to make a covenant with you. Now, in Genesis 15, God said to Abraham, I'm going to make a covenant. And then Abraham got together some animals. A heifer was one, which is a female cow before it's calved. A goat was another. A ram, which I believe is a male sheep. And a pigeon. And a dove. Now the Bible doesn't tell us that God told Abraham what to do with it, which seems to imply that Abraham already knew what to do with it. What he did was he cut these animals in half, but he didn't cut the birds in half. And he laid them on each side with something in between here, with a space in between. Vanderland is suggesting that this idea of a blood covenant is many centuries old, and Abraham was demonstrating a blood covenant here. He was preparing a blood covenant with God at this point. Well, Each party has their promise. God's promise is land, nation, Messiah. Abraham's promise is be perfect. Be blameless. Abraham kept the birds off these animals until dark. And then the Bible says a curious thing. A thick and dreadful darkness came upon Abraham. Do you see that in there? Genesis 15 something right in there. A thick and dreadful darkness. What is that? 15:12. Then a thick and dreadful darkness fell upon Abraham. I'd submit to you that he was really terrified. Really, really scared. What's he scared of? Might be scared of being in the presence of God. There's a possibility, I think there's room to believe that he was scared of the covenant he was fixing to make. Maybe. Give it some thought. Perhaps. These are kind of new thoughts to me. But I don't see a disconnect in these thoughts between what I already know about what the Scripture is and what Jesus is about. So, then after the sun set and it got dark, what does it say? A smoking pot and a blazing torch appeared. Is that what it says? A smoking pot and a blazing torch appeared between these two things right here, between these animals. And it passed through it. All right. What did those represent? God sealing the covenant. In this case, it appears that God himself did not step in the blood, but neither did Abraham. So, if it's between a greater and a lesser, who goes first? The greater. The greater goes first. So, the smoking pot went first, or at least it's stated first in the sentence. And it goes through there. I think that represents God saying, I'm going to give you this, Abraham, and if I don't, splash, 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 you can do this to me. But then the blazing torch comes through. And who does that represent? That's an interesting thought right there. If it represented Abraham, why didn't Abraham step in the blood? He's there. Here's what I'm beginning to believe, guys, and it's a big thought to me if it's true, if I'm getting it right. Maybe the flaming torch is God also. People are not represented as flames in the Bible. God is. Maybe the flaming torch is. But God's already gone. Well, it's Abraham's turn now. So maybe God is saying, whoa, wait a minute. Abraham's fixing to step up and God says, no. Abraham, you have got to be perfect. So, here I go. If you're not perfect, you can do this to me. And I think right there is where he sentenced Jesus Christ to death. How strong is a covenant, guys? Pardon me? No, sir. I don't think so. I'm talking about how strong a covenant is, the power of a covenant. What I think that covenant represents is why we're here today, is because Jesus, we can't be perfect, and Abraham knew it. And then this is how God answered it. Yes. What a great piece of news that is, too. And And I think, I've done an awfully lot of thinking about this, and I'm certainly not the last word on it, but it sure fits. It bears some thinking. In Malachi, God was getting on to some people because they weren't doing right. And their prayers weren't being answered, and they didn't know why. And he said this, another thing you do, this is God telling the people, you flood the Lord's altar with tears, and you weep and wail because he no longer pays attention to your offerings or accepts them with pleasure from your hands, and you ask why. Well, it's because the Lord is acting as a witness between you and the wife of your youth, because you've broken faith with her, though she is your partner and the wife of your marriage covenant. I think we can safely say that marriage is a covenant, and whether it's between the two people, it doesn't exactly fit that it's between a greater and lesser man and woman, but it does fit that it might be between the couple and God, because that's between a greater and lesser. Whichever way it's between, it's a pretty strong promise. I mean, it's a pretty strong relationship builder right there, is the covenant that we make with one another. Basically, if I don't treat you right, it's not a, you know, it's an interesting picture. Not only that, it's really powerful. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that gives us a lot of security, too, that it didn't run out the generation right before me. Yeah. Yeah, a new covenant I'll make with my people. Yeah, thank you, sir. It fulfilled the old one, kind of. He did what he said he'd do with Abraham. He kept his promise. Well, yes, sir. Thank you. Yep, start to finish, the Bible is about unity. Reconciliation. We'll be together. Yeah, that's true. Now, okay, we can agree in our hearts that this is what marriage is designed to be. Do all marriages work out? They do not. Yeah, a lot of them do not work out. In most, if not all cases, we can also safely say that one or perhaps both parties broke faith in some way or another in order to make that bond break up. One and perhaps both. Well, the frustration of living in this life is that people just won't do right. And so it's possible to marry somebody you ought never to have said hello to. What about that? Well, you can't live another person's life. You can keep your part of the covenant, but you can't keep another person from breaking faith. Mostly what we can do is, with God's help, we can keep ourselves from breaking faith. And that just doesn't only mean sexual promiscuity. Breaking faith is like keeping a promise, not keeping a promise that you made, or not providing for as much as you could, or not paying attention to as much as you could. So when marriages break up, it's safe to assume, I think, that one and perhaps both parties broke faith with the other. Well, so what do we do in that case? Where can we taste? And it creates immense pain, immense heartache, brokenness. So in cases like that, is the goodness of God nullified? Where can we taste the goodness of God in this struggle that we have? Life is not easy. Marriages break up. We hope that they don't. And we're called to not break them up. God just right after Malachi said, I hate divorce. And it's clear why. Because it just tears things all to pieces. But if that does happen, where can we go for help? Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. Vanderland says that shepherds over there are usually little girls or pre-adolescent boys. And because the grown folks are doing something else during that time. Well, I don't know what that does to our idea of the, I think Corey mentioned it earlier about the idea of the shepherds in the field at night and that sort of thing, or how old David was, when Samuel came to see him. He's watching sheep. But David wrote the psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Well, Vanderland spent a couple of years over there watching shepherds, and during the day they led them around and the sheep followed. And then at night, as the shadows grew long and as it got dark, the shepherd came back and mingled with the sheep. But to kind of keep them in line and say, okay, I'm here, everything's all right, that sort of thing. They have a really neat relationship with their sheep. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters, and he restores my soul. And he leads me in the paths of righteousness. So there's a picture right there of a shepherd leading a flock of sheep who love him and care for him. Next thing he says is, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for thou art with me. Perhaps in our deepest and darkest hours, God drops back and mingles among us and is with us at that point, saying it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And I'll give you what you need today. We can't get enough faith, guys, to live tomorrow's problems for today. We can just get enough for today. It's like manna. You couldn't gather up enough to do you through tomorrow. You had to do it again tomorrow morning. That's, I think, is what God promises us. Next week, I'm going to be gone again. Man, I really appreciate Sam Bradley teaching for me last week. I think he's going to teach again next Sunday, and then I think I'll be back for the rest of the time. But really appreciate your attention. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for a good day you've given us.